We're going to read John chapter 11. You got to read the whole thing. You got to have the whole story. I thought about trying to chop it up a little bit, but you just got to have the whole thing. So while you're turned there, a reminder for where we've been. This season, we've been paying attention to the questions that tend to come up around Jesus. Each week, someone approaches him with a question that seems reasonable, even faithful. But again and again, these questions are there because people notice a tension around Jesus. There's this tension between what he brings and just the way that things are. And each time he responds in a way that stretches assumptions that are behind those questions. And they reveal something deeper about who he is. Those questions have taken different forms. In the wilderness, in his temptation, it was a challenge about whether or not he was really the Son of God. Nicodemus wondered how someone can be born a second time. The Samaritan woman at the well raised this debate about where do we worship. And the disciples wanted to know who sinned that caused a man to be born blind. Each time these questions, they sound reasonable. They make sense. They're not off-the-wall questions. And each time, Jesus responds in a way that redirects the conversation toward a deeper truth about who God is. Every time. Today, the question comes from a different place. It doesn't rise from debate or a theological curiosity. It rises from grief. When people lose something, could be a job, could be a house in a disaster, it could be someone you love, it raises questions. And those questions tend to carry change in our lives. They become quieter and heavier. In moments like that, we're not usually trying to solve some theological puzzle. We just are trying to understand. We're trying to figure out where God is in the middle of all this big feelingness, the grief, the despair, the loss. And faith and sorrow in those kinds of moments often go side by side. The words that we can carry represent both at the same time. We are both full of words of sorrow and also words of hope. And we try to understand how we can put those two things together in the same basket. Many of us know what that feeling feels like in that moment when someone we love becomes seriously ill, or the moment whenever the phone rings with the news that you were hoping would never come, or the moment when all the prayers have been offered, all the hope has been held, and yet the outcome that you feared most still arrives. It's those moments where faith does not disappear. It just starts to sound different, doesn't it? It speaks in sentences that hold both trust and heartbreak at the same time. And sometimes those words sound like, if only things had been different. If only help had come sooner. If only the outcome had changed. If only God had been here the way that we hoped for. Today's gospel reading brings us into that kind of moment. It's a story that unfolds in the shadow of illness and grief, and a painful question about who and what God is, and what God is doing when death seems to have a final word. The word of the Lord from John chapter 11. A certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent a message to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is ill." And when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness does not lead to death. Rather, it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Accordingly, though Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, after having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then, after this, he said to his disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." Now the disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now trying to stone you, And do you want to go back? Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Those who walk during the day do not stumble because they see the light of this world, but those who walk at night stumble because the light is not in them." After saying this, he told them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going to awaken him." The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he's fallen asleep, he'll be all right." Jesus, however, had been speaking about his death, but they thought he was referring merely to sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and for your sake I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Now Thomas, who was called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "I guess we can all go and just die with him." They don't know what in the world's going on. He's making no sense. All they know is they've got a warrant on his head in Judea. So let's see what happens. When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away. And many of the Jews who had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met with him, while Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him." And Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." And Jesus said to her, No, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world." When she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately, "The teacher is here. He's calling for you." When she heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. And Jesus had not yet even gotten to the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who were with her in the house consoling her saw Mary get up quickly and go out. Now they followed her because they thought that she might be going to the tomb to weep there. But when Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit, deeply moved. He said, "Where have you laid him?" And they said to him, "Lord, come and see." And Jesus began to weep. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" And then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. And Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, it's been 4 days, it's going to be smelly." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone, and Jesus looked upward and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." And when he said this, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" And wouldn't you know, the dead man came out. His hands and feet were bound with strips of cloth, and his face was wrapped in a cloth. And Jesus said to them, "Unbind him, let him go." Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what Jesus did, believed in him. Jesus says something that changes the entire frame of this story. "I am the resurrection and the life." It reframes the entire moment, because no longer is he simply there to see, to grieve. And no longer are they there to hope in something in the far distant future. In the present tense, in that real moment, he says, don't wait for resurrection later. I am currently resurrection. I am life. Those are what he is, not what he will do. It's who he is, not what will be. And he asks the sisters if they can believe something like that. Can you believe it? Do you believe this? Yet even faithful hope can sometimes keep resurrection at a distance. It can become something that we affirm intellectually while still feeling the full weight of death in front of us. Martha's response holds both belief and sorrow together, hand in hand. It's what you do at a funeral, isn't it? We know this, we've done this. You go to a funeral and you feel the weight of it, but you speak hope in it. And we all pretend as if that's normal. This is just what you do, that somehow makes sense. But if we're truly honest with ourselves, it's optimistic at best, right? We don't really know how to wrap our heads around this. And so we say all the right things, like we know that one day they'll rise again. And we say that to one another, but really we're just trying to convince ourselves that we believe that this is somehow just not final. It's not real. We're trying to hold on to a hope that we don't know if we even believe in that moment. We understand Martha. We understand Mary, what they're trying to do. And Jesus is kind, kinder than all of us deserve. He doesn't try to correct her belief, right? When she says, I believe that he'll be raised on the last day, he doesn't tell her, no, you got it all wrong. He can be raised today. He goes with it. He goes with her in this. He walks with her in this journey. He doesn't correct her about a future resurrection. But he does refuse to let the conversation remain only in the future. He tries to bring it back into the present. He refuses to let this conversation remain only about what will happen one day. Instead, he shifts the focus towards something far more immediate. He says, I am the resurrection and life. And in that moment, resurrection stops being some future event and becomes something alive, embodied in the very person standing right before these sisters. He doesn't merely promise that resurrection will happen someday. He declares that resurrection is present in him there and then. And he continues by saying that those who believe in him, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in him will never die. These words do not dismiss the reality of death. They reveal a deeper reality about the life that comes from God. He's not saying death isn't real. He's not saying Lazarus isn't dead. But he is pointing out that in him, the power of life has entered a world that death thought it could control. But it can't. And then he asks the question that stands at the very heart of the story. Can you believe this? Do you believe this? And I need you to notice what he's doing in this moment. Martha has been speaking about what Jesus could have done in the past. If you had been here, if you had just showed up the first time I told you he was sick, you could have prevented all of this. And she's also talking about what God is going to do in the distant future. I know that one day God can raise him on the last day. And she's torn between those two moments in time, between the what should have happened and the what could happen. And he brings that conversation into the present and asks whether she can trust him there and then, right then, if she believes him that moment. And Martha's response becomes one of the greatest confessions of faith in the whole Gospel of John. She says, as clear as day, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world. And before Lazarus ever walks out of the tomb, Martha had already confessed the very identity of Jesus. The miracle that follows will be astonishing, but the deeper revelation has already begun. Martha's life has changed before they ever go to the tomb. Something is different in her in that moment. Because what Jesus is revealing here is that resurrection is not simply a moment at the end of history. It's not just this moment when God reverses death. Resurrection is also the life of God already breaking into the middle of all of this mess. Wherever Jesus is present, the power of death no longer has any final authority. Death still wounds, death still grieves, but death is no longer ultimate. That is why Jesus asked Martha the question before anything happens at the tomb, because faith is not about believing that a miracle will occur. Faith is about trusting the one who stands before you. Miracle or not, you trust the one standing before you. If Jesus truly is resurrection and life, then the life itself is standing in front of Martha in this moment, even though that tomb door is sealed. And this is what moves this whole conversation beyond expectation. Martha begins by speaking about what Jesus could have done earlier. Jesus invites her to trust who he is now. The question is no longer simply whether Lazarus might live again. The deeper question is whether Martha can trust her hope to the one who holds life itself. Can she trust in him even though nothing has changed yet? If he truly is the resurrection and the life, then faith begins to look different in these ordinary moments. It means that our hope is not built on whether or not the circumstances unfold the way we expect them to. It means that trust in Christ does not depend on every prayer being answered the way you wanted it to. It means that even before you ask a question, you believe. It means that even before you have a need, you trust. Many of us know what it feels like to stand where Martha stood. We know what it means to carry grief, to face illness, to sit beside hospital beds, to watch the news, to watch the world unfold the way that it does. We know what it is to wish things had turned out differently. We know what it is to sit there and see things the way they are and think, if only God had showed up just a little earlier. In those moments, the temptation we have is to measure faith by outcomes, isn't it? If God acts the way that we hoped, then our trust feels justified. If events turn out differently, then faith is justified. But if things don't turn out the way that we want them to, faith begins to feel uncertain. If Lazarus had not died, Mary and Martha would have said, "See, we were right. You can heal him." But now that he's dead, they're uncertain about who they put their trust in. This question, do you believe this? Can you believe this? This question that Jesus raises to Martha moves in a very different direction. He doesn't first ask her to believe that Lazarus is going to walk out of the tomb. He does not ask her, "Can you believe that I can make him come out of the tomb today?" He wants to know whether she can trust him no matter what happens next. Can you believe in this no matter what happens next? The center of faith in this story is not control over what happens next. The center of faith is confidence in the one who holds life itself, no matter what. That kind of trust doesn't remove grief. It doesn't eliminate the reality of death. Even in this story, Jesus himself weeps at the tomb. He grieves his dead friend. Faith in the resurrection doesn't require us to pretend that death is harmless or that sorrow is insignificant. It does mean that death is no longer a final authority over anything. And to trust Jesus as the resurrection and the life is to believe that the life of God is stronger than anything that threatens it. It means believing that even when the future feels uncertain, the presence of Christ among us is still the source of our hope. We may not always know what Jesus will do next, but we do know who he is. And that is enough. That knowledge begins to reshape the way we live. Instead of measuring our faith by outcomes, we learn to place our trust in the one who brings life where the world expects only death. We begin to trust someone who can bring change where we think change is impossible. Even in the moments where the tomb feels and seems so closed and final, we continue to trust in the one who can open just about any tomb there is. At the center of the story stands this declaration, "I am the resurrection and the life." These words not only spoken to Martha long ago, they continue to echo in the life of the church today. They remind us that resurrection is not merely an event we hope for someday far off, but it's a life that we encounter in Christ himself day after day, in the here, in the now. When we gather at this table in a few moments, we come into the presence of the one who speaks these words. The bread, the cup, they don't erase the reality of grief or suffering in the world. They don't ignore the tombs around us. But this meal reminds us that God has entered the very depths of human mortality with Christ, that he weeps and mourns alongside of us, but also that the one who called Lazarus out of the tomb is the same one who gave his life for the world, the same one who is raised again in victory over death. At this meal, we receive signs of that life given for us, where Christ meets us again as resurrection and life. It's why, as a kid, just personal pet peeve here, and take it or leave it, even as a kid, I remember thinking that communion was a little weird because we always talk so much about how he died when we do this meal. And that sets a tone, doesn't it? When we only talk about how Jesus died during communion, it's a funeral meal, right? But if we can also pair in that moment his resurrection, then it's a celebration. I understand in memory of, but we also have celebration. If the story stops with him dying on a cross, then it's an inspirational story, I guess, but it has no power. But because he was raised, because he is resurrection, because he is life, because he didn't stay in the tomb, this meal is different. And because he didn't stay in the tomb, every moment of your life is different, not just someday, today. We come to this table not because every question has been answered, but we can trust the one who entered a tomb and also came back out of it. As we join together in communion, we hear that same question that Jesus asked Martha, spoken all those years ago, asked again and again, time after time, "Can you believe this? Can you trust him?" And if you need to know whether or not you can trust him, if you can believe any of this, that is the point of this meal. This meal reminds you how trustworthy he is. Because if he's willing to die on a cross for all of us, then I think it's safe to say this is a safe place to put your trust. We can believe this. We do believe this. We take this bread, we take this cup, to proclaim our answer to his question. We do believe this, and we do trust him. Let's stand and sing.
In Christ alone.